Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
All right, we continue on a Thursday. And doing post-traumatic winning again tomorrow down for the 5th Marine Regiment is having an event and invited me to do it there. So be back there. Joining me is the godfather of All Marine Radio, Bob Nielsen. So, Vito, how are you?
Good morning, Mac. How are you?
I'm all right. I got home at 2 o'clock last night, or this morning.
You must be enjoying commuting to 29 bombs.
You know what? I've had worse commutes. I've had shittier commutes than that. But I've got it memorized. So, no, it was, but I mean, if you could imagine, Bob, Marines sitting in the sand on camp stools and stuff, screen, right, audio sound system, a couple speakers sitting in the sand, and under about 80 degrees at night, under the dark sky, and absolutely beautiful out there. So, no, it was cool.
Yeah, I bet 6 months ago they didn't expect to be listening to this.
No, hell, 2 weeks ago, this morning they probably didn't expect to be listening to it. Like, what are we doing? But I'll tell you what, it's really funny. When I start, I normally will say something like this. Now, I know you're sitting there thinking, you know, when you got told you had to be here, like, oh, fuck, somebody's going to tell us not to kill ourselves. 2 hours of my life, I'm not going to fucking get back. And they start laughing, right? And I say, look, you're not going to hear me say a couple things. I don't use the word resiliency. I'm not even sure what that is. And I'm not going to tell you not to kill yourself. And so that begins a series of, you've heard me say it, but what I call table flipping, you know, moments that
yep.
get it into their head that this is not like other things I've seen. And why does
yeah.
it, and why does this guy cuss so much? So it was awesome. And then, you know, and again, what's really cool is afterwards, the spectrum of ages that come up and want to talk about it. And it's young people who've grown up with trauma in their family, older Marines that have, you know, fought in wars and their friends are struggling. And I mean, I say things like this and your words of encouragement always echo in my head because I get emails, you know, like the one I read a bit ago that says, you know, as a group, we're struggling. And it's like, we haven't figured out to tell the truth to these guys that you're not going to get over it, right? That if, you know, that you have to talk about it, right? Like all the genius shit that is in the 3 goals and 9 commandments of post-traumatic winning. That's not shit that I made up, man. That's just shit that I heard guys like Bob talking about, you know, and all the different guests I've had come on here and talk about it.
Carl Melantis.
Carl Marlanis, Jeremiah Workman, Ross Pape,
yep.
my sister, you know,
yep.
Ken Rogers. I mean, Ken
yep.
Rogers talked about coming home from Vietnam and being drunk for 25 years. And when he's talking about being drunk, I mean, when you hear him, that little audio cut where he says, and when I'm talking about drinking, I'm talking about drinking a case of beer a day and then a bottle of wine at night or a half a fifth of whiskey. Now, I don't know how you define drunk, but where I come from, that's drunk as fuck.
Yep.
And he said, I did that for 25 years. I mean, holy shit. And so,
yeah.
I don't know, Bob, it's just like, is it too much for us to look at people and tell them the truth? And so, anyway. So, I mean, it's...
Well, I'm glad you're going to see the 5th Marines tomorrow, because that's the outfit I was attached to when in Vietnam. They were operating between Da Nang and Chulai out west of Tam Ki. And that's who we were supporting most of the time, because I had B Company First Shore Party. And I'll tell you, there's not a day in my life that I don't think how goddamn impressive those grunts are. They are just unbelievable guys.
The best. And so last night, I'm with these logisticians. So we're driving out, and you haven't been 29 Palms, but Let me just tell you, the shit that's out there is amazing, though. That you know, you can go out there and operate out of. Now, but you can tell, like, what grunts did, right? And then what engineers did. Engineers do beautiful stuff, right? Grunts do stuff, and it's, like, totally ghetto, right? There might be some 4x4s involved in it and some 2x4s, but you see something that looks beautiful, you're like, whoa, look at that. That must be a support. That must be a support firm base. Yeah, it is. Engineers did that. Engineers did that. So, nah, they're just, it's a wonderful, wonderful experience. And on, as, and everybody knows, I mean, I can't do it enough. Or, you know, I can't do it frequently enough. I can't talk about it enough. And the response from whether they be young Marines or old Marines is the same, which is pretty interesting.
It doesn't matter what generation.
No, because they've lived through it. And some may have lived with it with personal stuff. Some may have lived with it through stuff they've encountered in the Marine Corps. But when you eliminate that line and tell them it doesn't fucking matter where you got it.
Yep. All and remember, the 20-25-year-old Marines and caregivers might only be 20-25, but in terms of life experience, they're going on 50.
Going on 80, for God's sake.
Yeah, they've been through everything.
Yeah.
And I'm convinced it's tough on the caregivers as it is on the individual.
Well, I don't know if you've talked to Ken Rogers, but they're making a movie. And
yep.
I Married the War, I think is the name. And they're still in the post-production piece of it and doing all the stuff you have to do to bring something like that to market. But, I mean, they discovered these stories as they interviewed guys. And so they're going to tell that side of it, the caregiver part of it. It's like, yeah, this is not what I really signed up for, right?
Like, my wife and I went in Sunday to Annapolis to have brunch with two twin sisters that are just probably under 30, and their brother was badly wounded with TBI, oh God, 11, 12 years ago. And they've been struggling with it and living with it for all that time. And he's in a 24/7 care facility now. But you just don't appreciate how much a family goes through when this happens.
No.
The mother and father, the brothers and sisters, it's absolutely unbelievable.
If you don't have a window into it, I mean, you'll see stuff on TV, right? But it's not real.
Yeah.
And until you see
a snapshot.
Right. Until you see a family that's doing it 24/7 and you see the toll that it takes on them. Yeah.
And that is 24/7 for the rest of your life.
Right.
It ain't going to be better tomorrow or next month or next Christmas.
Right.
You know, you're always looking for a place for the vet. You're always looking for somebody to help them. You're looking for the latest care. You're looking in the private sector to see what steps they're doing. Who's come up with new ideas? Who's come up with things for epilepsy or whatever else goes along with TBI? And how the hell do you deal with it?
Well,
it's,
you know,
it's really a struggle.
Oh no, it's an ass kicker. My first probably encounters of things like this were when I went to work for Special Olympics. And and one of the things I noticed was that the parents of the athletes that would participate in Special Olympics, they looked older than the other parents that were the same age.
Interesting.
They physically looked older. And, I mean, it was because of the pressure and the stress of taking care of somebody who was going to be, you know, 7 or 8 years old for the rest of their life. And that, you know, being, you know, day on, stay on, you know, like that forever. And I noticed that almost right away. And then it makes you curious about, holy shit, what is that like?
Yeah, and all you got to do is walk the halls of Walter Reed or the old Bethesda or Bilboa or Brooks Army and look at the caregivers, and you can see it.
Yeah.
You know, you can see it on their face. And who the hell do they turn to? They don't have, you know, Caregiving for Dummies book. They got to rely on others.
No, and the other part is kind of their own Bushido code that they get caught inside of, and that is this. How can I bitch? And who do I bitch to about taking care of people that can't take care of themselves, who have it much worse than I do?
And who's really listening, and who's just giving me lip service? You got to have your own built-in bullshit detector.
And so it's kind of like a violation of their own Bushido code to complain about that stuff. I'm going to complain about my shit when the person I take care of has it a million times worse than I do?
Yeah.
And
right. It's unbelievable.
And so they enter. All right, bring us up to date with you. What have you been up to? What's going on with your, first of all, what's going on with your Vietnam discussion group?
We had one more with a small group that was fascinating because we probably spent as much time talking about World War II as we did talk about Vietnam. And now a guy came up to me, and it's funny, it marries in with what you've been talking about the last 2 weeks. He wants to have a discussion the next time we have one on D-Day. And, you know, your discussions on D-Day, particularly with Lynch and Kenny, were just absolutely unbelievable. And you saw the PowerPoint slideshow I sent you that I got from Ken Wilson, another Vietnam Marine that's a good buddy of mine. You can't comprehend what was done there. So I think our discussions are going to be shifting around, which I think is great. But we got people interested in talking about it.
Yeah, these pictures. And I'll link the presentation to this hour, because when you look at the pictures, right, even the stupid among us, which I would include myself as part of, the sheer amount of shit that you see that was required for this push into Western Europe. Again, remember, not just for the landing. Everything that would sustain them for months had to be ready to go.
For a year.
Right.
Yeah. Max, you know, Lynch and Kenny brought it up, but if you've ever been on an amphibious landing, the practice one, that's one of the more complicated goddamn endeavors you can ever do, particularly when you're combining air, ground, and sea. And I did Steel Pike 1, which was off the coast of Spain. We showed up with the 2nd Marine Division, the 2nd Marine Air Wing, off the coast of Spain, I guess it was 64, and I was an embarkation officer. I didn't even know how to spell embarkation. And we landed, and the Spanish people in Spain thought we were liberating them from Franco. And they came down to the beach to welcome us, and of course the next thing that came were gallons of red wine at 75 cents a gallon. But we put a division ashore, and it was unbelievable. Now, you know, D-Day, which was 64, that was 20 years before that, was, you know, 100 times the size or 1,000 times the size. I can't even conceive of it. And,
no.
And I think you pointed out, no computers.
Exactly. And how did we do this? We didn't have a computer. What?
Yeah.
No computers. Come on. Is this a joke? No, it's not. It's serious.
Yeah. It's mind-boggling, and we need to pay attention to that kind of stuff and look at the thinking that went, not only the strategic planning at the strategic level, but the working effort to pull it together. The zillion of goddamn logistics guys that were involved didn't ever got any credit for anything.
Yeah.
You know, how do you get?
But again, you can say this, right? Like, and this is the power of what Bob sent me, and that's why I'll link it. You can say this stuff, right? But when you're looking at a picture of, I don't even know what bomber it is, and they're being towed by trucks, right?
Yeah.
They're as far as the picture is, these aircraft are lined up, being towed to a facility or whatever. Or you see ambulances a field full of ambulances that fills
up. 1,000 ambulances.
Yeah. You look at it and you're like, shit, man, that's a lot of ambulances. And you see image after image after image, to include the docks that they used and the size of that shit and all the stuff that they did. And you see image after image after image. It's just, it's pretty amazing.
And Mac, the looks on the faces of the guys on the landing craft is absolutely unbelievable.
Yeah.
Because they know their odds ain't very good. They're absolutely convinced of that. The one picture that wasn't in the group that I've seen is there's a photograph floating around of about 8 nurses in skirts and Oxfords landing, I think, D+4 on Normandy, getting out of the landing craft and walking through the surf. You can't even conceive of that. Yeah, unbelievable stuff.
No, I and again, the pictures of anybody, right, whether Marines in the Pacific or soldiers in the, in the European theater, whether they be going ashore at Anzio, going ashore in North Africa. I mean, that's the sobering moment, right? What's going to happen?
Oh, yeah.
We've trained. We've talked about it. We've talked shit about it. Now we're going to find out who lives and who dies.
I know just from going into landing zones in Vietnam in the helicopter, because first shore party, instead of doing amphibious landings, we're doing helicopter stalls in Vietnam. And that's the scariest goddamn thing in the world.
Well, and you know what's part of it is that most of the time, whether if you're in an aviation asset, it's so loud, right? It's so loud, you can't hear shit. So you're alone with your thoughts, right? And you can talk with your eyes and smile and wink at somebody or give the oh shit look, you know, but you tend to be, you know, because of the noise, you tend to be alone. If you're in a landing craft, you know, most of the time, you know, your guys are getting seasick. And once one guy gets sick, then the whole thing cuts loose. Then so you, everybody's standing there, you know, and you're doing your thing, and all of a sudden one person, you know, everybody's feeling it, or a lot of guys feel it.
And the plug is pulled.
Oh, my God. One guy pukes, and then you hear, bleh. You're like, oh, shit. Right? And there's puke everywhere. And you're like.
Changing subjects for a second. One of the things I want to tell you about, we take a break during the summer with 100 entrepreneur classes, but we did one down at Fort Belvoir last week. And it was really great for a particular reason. Well, one of our presenters was a vet that had come through Walter Reed about 11 years ago. He'd been wounded in Afghanistan early in the war, pretty badly wounded. He was rehab at the old Walter Reed. And since then, he's gotten out, finished undergraduate school. He's gone to graduate school. He's worked full time. He's gotten married. He married a Red Cross volunteer at Walter Reed. And they've got a baby. And in the process, he's decided to become an entrepreneur, and he's setting up with an experienced guy a physical fitness gym center in Arlington, Virginia that's about to open. And he spoke to about 20 vets at Fort Belvoir about all the mistakes he's made and all the things he's done right. And this is 8, 9, 10 years after I first met him.
Wow.
So that little seed that gets planted, germinated, and now he's doing it. And it was so great because this guy is sharp. He was highly decorated. He was special ops. In fact, he was at the White House a few months ago when one of his guys, a medic, I think got the Congressional Medal of Honor. But he's just a great guy. And you know, just listen to him, that business is going to work. You know, he's got his heart and soul into it. And you could just feel it in the classroom. So, you know, it gives me huge pleasure when you see something like that.
Well, you've done a ton of that in your life. Does it ever get old for you?
No. It's the best thing I've ever done. It keeps me going.
That and the pizza.
That and the pizza and listening to All Marine Radio.
The All Marine Radio is the coolest.
The the Lynch and Kennedy philosopher hour.
Oh, my God. Those idiots.
I love them. They're great. They remind me so much of all the guys I used to hang around with.
Unbelievable.
They're absolute experts on 10% of what they talk about.
Yeah, just ask them. They'll tell you.
They're great.
Yeah. How about Jeff Kenney? Yeah, I don't think what George Marshall was advocating, I don't think that would have worked. Well, who the fuck cares what you think, right? You don't think something that George Marshall advocated? Okay, I got it. Next subject. No. I always enjoyed the conversation. How about, you know, that conversation is amazing. Marshall's
the Marshall conversation is unbelievable. And somehow, you got to get Mattis on with the guy from Tokyo.
Grant?
Grant Newsham. You got to try to get the two of them on. That'll be the best interview ever in the history of the world.
I don't know that you bring anybody else on when you have...
No, you really can't. But I mean, but Mattis, to me, strikes me as a Marshall-type intellect. And his studying of history, and in a lot of ways like Zinni, you know, nothing really new ever happens. It's a repeat of things we learned, you know, 250 years ago.
Right. No, he is certainly... And again, what's really interesting is when you see... General Mattis, Secretary Mattis, whichever you prefer, when you would see him at international events, literally there would be this electricity at the event because of his presence. And you just don't see that very much. But the thing that is most impressive is his respect for our allies, the articulate way that he discusses history, and the way he tends to take the bloviating and speaks very plain spoken from a position of historical truth and American interest. And he said, this is the way that this will be. This is the way this is. And this is our interest in the region. We don't have, you know, and you see the respect that, and he's done this for decades, right? He's done this for decades. And you see the respect and that he commanded.
I only saw him once. And it was at the New Walter Reed, and it was last week he was on active duty, and he stopped by the MATSE for 2 hours to talk to the wounded, and there was absolute electricity between him and the wounded. He was the only general I ever saw come through Walter Reed without an aide, and he could walk and talk and communicate, and it was one-on-one, equal to equal, in a way that you just don't see. And there was... You knew they were understanding what he was saying, and he was understanding what they were saying.
He loves that. I mean, of all the things that he does, having worked for him, one of the things that he personally loves the most is to be with young Marines. They give him, he sucks the energy out of them. And the cult figure that he is, they absolutely love it.
He was telling them a story about being up on the front lines in Iraq. And he realized, who the hell needs a four-star general up here? He said, I got to do something useful, so he carried ammunition.
Well, no, and he does that stuff, and you know, they look around like, is that the CG? Yeah. What's he doing? Well, he's helping out with mortar ammunition over there right now. Like, what?
Yep.
What?
Yep. Unbelievable. But those are interviews I'm looking forward to, and Grant is just phenomenal. He digests China and Asia better than anybody I've ever heard.
Well, you know, and it is amazing. How about Joe Biden even? Joe Biden even turned from saying that, yeah, China's not really a problem to China is a problem. And we have to
I remember well when Nixon first went there and Kissinger helped orchestrate that. And that was a big deal. Because for years we let a wall be blocked up there.
Right.
And we did open the door. But then... We opened the door, we never closed it again, we gave away the goddamn kitchen sink. And you know, when I think of our big American companies manufacturing all their technology in their country, and you know goddamn well we're looking inside the black box. You know absolutely well. And it's just goddamn stupid on the part of our country. And I don't care what party's in charge, we've been doing dumb things so long.
Right. Well, that's the amazing thing is, so why have we never... Why have we not got together with the rest of the, you know, the free nations of the world and said, okay, look, China's got a decent head start, okay? They're now bigger than you in terms of their developed economy. This whole transition thing, you know, with the World Trade Organization, that needs to end. And they need to come to the table as an equal partner, which means, you know, the end of forced technology transfer. They have to stop stealing intellectual property, and they have to come play by the rules that we all play by. And we have to stick together.
The problem, Matt, and Grant has told you this several times, American industry is seduced by the fact all they can think of is having 1.5 billion customers in China.
Right. No, you're right.
People, you know why iPhones are manufacturing all that stuff in China? Because they want to sell 1.5 billion iPhones.
Right.
That's exactly what's going on. And you got to get over that.
But you're right. As a capitalist, I mean, look at Google. Google is this, in theory, right, this extremely liberal, right, organization that is concerned with everybody's rights, but yet what are they doing? They're helping the Chinese, right, create products that will help track the social score. I mean, they're trying to help the Chinese create something that Orwell couldn't even conceive of.
Yep. And one, the other thing that Grant points out, which you not cannot forget, is China's big weakness, two big weaknesses. They operate on a soft currency. They need hard currency like U.S. dollars to operate. And the second thing is they're scared to death that what's going on in Hong Kong right this week is going to happen in other places in China. Because they know it would be difficult to control if it were bigger than Tiananmen Square. And they're scared to death about that. They never talk about it.
Right.
No, it's something else.
Well, you know, it's interesting. One of my friends who worked in D.C., Marine, right, and tended to travel a bit, he said, you know where the bulk of the Chinese military is, right? And I said, where? And they said, you know, in China. They have to control the population. If they don't control the population, the jig is up. And they have, right? You get away from the eastern coast of China, and you have a little bit different thing going on. And we don't tend to focus on that. They're more, the biggest threat to China is not external. It is internal. And they know that. So it's just,
they know it, but the rest of the West doesn't pay attention to that.
What do you find the most interesting? I mean, have you ever built anything in China?
We have been building in Asia, starting in Hong Kong since the early 60s, I guess maybe 1960. We started building 99 20-story buildings in Hong Kong. We built in Taiwan, we built in Korea, we built all around Asia. We've participated on probably half a dozen projects in China, and we found that they bring us in when it's a very complicated project and it's a piece they don't know or understand, and they use us to help solve that problem, and then they get rid of us. They don't want us getting the credit for building the building. You know, we're the biggest builder of high-rises in the world for construction. But when they build their high rises, they do it with their own companies. And they copy what we do in the West. And they copy it, and then the truth is they end up doing it better after they do it a couple of times. When they first started building high rises, they put up 50, 60 story buildings with one elevator in it. Well, that's the dumbest goddamn thing you can ever do. But they learned. And they're very good at doing that. And they're absolutely outstanding at that. But they really don't let you come in to do the whole thing.
Interesting.
But we got paid, and we had good contracts. Now, we've worked with private Chinese owners that live both in China and in their expats in the rest of the Asian countries, and they're excellent to work for. I mean, I've worked with the Chinese anywhere. We've built buildings for them, high-rise buildings in Taiwan and Singapore, Sri Lanka, and they knew exactly what they wanted, and they wanted the best in the world to do their buildings.
Interesting.
That's Chinese private sector. But if you look as I said this before, you look at all the other countries around China and Asia, and the Philippines, Florida, Malaysia, all of those countries, a huge percent of the cash, the capital in that country, is controlled by a handful of Chinese residents that have lived there many, many years. They control a lot of the money in Southeast Asia.
Now, for those who don't know, every time the subject of hard currency comes up, you seize on that. Give everybody your take on the whole hard currency, Bob.
I'm the furthest guy in the world from an expert, but the China currency isn't worth a shit to most of the world. You can't exchange it like we do the dollar. You can go anywhere and exchange a dollar for whatever the going rate is. The soft currency, you can't do that. So China has to have dollars to operate in the world marketplace. And they've got a lot of American dollars. But that's what the issue is, and Grant could explain it a lot better than I could. So when we would go there and do something in China, we would often get what we call bifurcated contracts, where we get paid for local expenses in whatever the Chinese currency was, yen or whatever, that'd be in Japan, but we get paid in the local Chinese currency for local expenditures, and then we get paid in hard dollars for expenditures back home. So you got to think of that, and almost nobody in the States talks about it, but it's an issue.
And so they're constantly converting, right? Their own currency, and when you do that, I mean, that's real. You got to have real money. You can't have like Russian money to do that.
Exactly.
And the Russians have the same issue too.
Yeah, but it's slightly different. But it's in differences I couldn't even begin to explain.
Right.
There are countries with soft currencies, and there are countries with hard currencies. The European countries all have hard currencies.
Bob Nielsen, my guest here. Email. Mac, I'm curious. You talk about somebody who just had a kid and also starting a business. That seems like an awful lot to chew in one bite. Bob's done this entrepreneur thing for a long time. Does he give any mental health advice when he talks? Because entrepreneurship is nothing to joke about. I hear you now talk about the amount of times that Almarine Radio has gone off the air because you got your electricity shut off in the last 3 years trying to stretch a buck. And part of me laughs, but part of me understands what it is to lay in bed at night and look at the ceiling and not know how you're going to do it. And so desperate times call for desperate measures. Does he give any mental health advice to entrepreneurs? Yeah, that's no bullshit. That's no bullshit either.
That's an interesting question, because what I found, I've been visiting Walter Reed in Bethesda for 17 years. I've been doing the 100 Entrepreneurs program for over 10. Well, what I found in the last 2 or 3 years listening on Marine Radio, almost every one of our presentations, I end up bringing up the subject of post-traumatic winning for a couple reasons. Part of it is we try to plant a seed on becoming an entrepreneur. If a vet is retired and he's got 80 or 100% disability, you don't want to be sitting home watching TV, drinking beer in the afternoon. So we try to plant a seed that there's something you can go do, and you can be passionate about, get something out of it, and fill your brain, that empty space, with something good, not bullshit. But the second thing is, if I do that, all of a sudden, you're beginning to feel positive about what you're doing, feel positive about your life, you begin to share it with others, and God damn it, you're all fitting into that post-traumatic winning pattern following the 11 commandments, or whatever they are. So there's a real connection between the two. And, you know, I've helped probably now over 300 vets start businesses, vets or caregivers. And one thing I'm certain of, the problems with suicide and stuff like that for the vets that we've helped almost disappear.
Why?
Because you're working on something that's positive in the brain that you're passionate about. And you're talking to other people, and you're sharing ideas, and you're communicating, and you're not dealing with the negative aspects. Oh, God, poor me. I'm the only one that ever went through this shit.
Right. You know,
and it all fits into your pattern, so the two are linked together.
You know, and the more I do this, the more, and this is where I talk about, the more I do this, the more I talk about the truth and how important the truth is. Because if all you're left with, if you don't run across anybody that can be a trauma mentor to you or how to live with it guide for you, the only thing you're left with is this internal focus on, I can't get away from this hurt.
Yeah.
And the answer that we all know to be true is, no shit. And you never will.
Exactly right. All you got to do is listen to your sister's story.
Right.
And, you know,
right.
Those things.
So how do you get it to good? There's only one way, and that is you take these truths coupled with your experience, and you go touch other people's lives and ease their pain. That's the only way to get it to good. And so that's what makes my heart sad when I read an email like I read before, like we have guys with opioid problems. We have, you know, we just lost a guy last week, you know. We have guys with, you know, all kinds of wrecked family situations. And it's like, well, you know, if we told everybody the truth, do you think that would make a difference? All right, everybody listen up. You're not getting over this shit. What? Okay, yeah, now that I got your attention, here's the way this works.
Mac, the key part of talking to other vets is the listening part. Not talking about what you did or what a hot shit you were in the war or what problems you got. Listening to the other vet, getting him or her to open up and talk about it.
Well, I will say this. I think after you tell them the truth. Because I don't think your experiences mean shit to them. I mean, okay, so you did this and he did this.
They don't care whether Mac, you know, has a sister or anything else. But it's the message you're getting across.
Right, right. No,
after every one of your sentences, you've got 100 guys lined up to talk to you.
Right. And so you're doing that, and they're like, who the fuck is this dude? Like, now that he has my attention, holy shit. And everything he says is like hitting it on the screws. Like, now I'll listen. All right. And then, but the message is this. Hey, we're not going to allow you to go away and to lick your wounds and to try to live a normal life. That's not what we want from you. We want you to go back to your community. We want you to use your experiences. And I've changed the way I've done, I do post-traumatic winning. When I talk about what is it to win, that's when I play a video of John McCain. And I say, the guys at the Hanoi Hilton, they won. And let me tell you how they won.
Yeah.
They gave to each other. They unburdened themselves. They forgave each other. So before they ever came home, they were already transformed. They had already had the Grinch moments because they showed up when they got all put together the last 2 years they were there. When they got put into groups of 50, the first, you know, days they were together were a little bit awkward because guys had been broken. They had ratted people out. And they said, hey, you don't want to talk to me, right? I've ratted everybody in here out. And the response they got was, oh, I'll fucking talk to you because I ratted everybody else out too, man. They broke me too.
Right. Exactly right.
And so they helped each other. And by helping each other and transforming other people, they transform themselves. So we don't want less than from you. We want more from you. What? And you can do it. You can do it. And so to me, how different would it be, their lives be, if instead of this message of, if you need therapy, go see this, and we'll help you cope, and resiliency in my mind is...
Like depressant pills, yeah. And we'll give you sleeping pills, and we'll give you all this.
Resiliency, to me, is bouncing back from something. I don't want you to bounce back, okay? Yeah, you're going to deal with that your whole fucking life. What I want you to do is I want you to be more than that, not just to bounce back. And so, and again, I know, I understand what they're talking about in resiliency. I just don't like the visual connotation. Oh, I'm going to bounce back. And what am I going to bounce back to? Being a diminished version of what I used to be? Well,
yeah, you're never going to be what you were 6 months before you joined the service. I don't care the service. I don't care what you think.
But if you embrace post-traumatic winning, I promise you, you'll be greater than you were.
Absolutely.
So you got a choice. Absolutely. And so I it bothers me though when I read these emails and I say, hey, look, man, I'm not gonna come with the smoke machine and start inserting tubes up everybody's ass and blow
you
smoke.
You mean you're not gonna wear robes in there when you come in the room and come on out of a cloud of dry ice?
Run. You know, that would be interesting. That would be interesting. Put on a strobe light, right? Yeah, put
the chaplains running to the door.
A little 70s music. They'd be like, whoa. Get the Quaaludes out. This guy must be a Vietnam guy. No, he's not. No, man, I was a little kid when those kooks were running around.
Oh, jeez.
Hey, you can't call Vietnam guys kooks. Why not? They kind of are. Yeah, I know. That's why we can't say that. All right, whatever.
Yeah, but once we started talking, we're much more acceptable in society.
You know what? That is true. That is true. Plus, nobody wants to piss you guys off because they don't know what's going to happen. But I'm beyond that. I like Vietnam guys. I mean, you want to go to a good party? Go party with Vietnam guys.
And the other thing, Mac, when you do this, you know, I'm so glad that you stress that this shit doesn't go away. The older you get as a veteran, the more you're going to think about this shit. When you get retirement age and you got a lot of time in your hands, you think about this shit. That's why you need to be thinking about post-traumatic winning now. It needs to become woven into the fabric of your life.
Well, and again, I just, I say this because it happens to me all the time. And I make jokes about it, but I tell people, like, look, I'm the coolest motherfucker here. And they all laugh. And I said, not because I'm innately cool, but I kind of am. I've always been a cool guy. Even when I was a little kid, I was a cool guy. But the reason I'm cool now is by the time I get done with this fucking thing tonight, and we'll spend a couple hours together, I will have at least one, possibly more than one message from somebody whose life this has impacted.
Yep.
And they will say thank you. How do I ever thank you? They will ask me to help other people. And it is that moment the Grinch has. And the coolest part of that is what I'm going to tell you now. You can be as cool as me. Because there's nothing in these truths that I've put into 3 goals and 9 commandments now. I added a commandment. It used to be 2 and 8, now it's 3 and 9.
Right.
The third goal is you have to embrace self-discipline in your life. And because if you don't, you'll be a wreck, right? You'll be a disaster. So that's got to be one of your goals. And then the other commandment is a blinding flash of the obvious, but I never really spoke about money in it. I mean, I made up a little story, but I mean, when you look at the reasons why people get off the rails, one of them is financial.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And if you don't learn about money, if you don't make yourself smart about money and get good at handling money, and then if you don't have enough self-discipline to do that shit, your shit's going to be ragged. And so get good at money. Get good at money and get good about knowing about your money. And so anyway. So, but again, if there's nothing rocket science about that. But I will tell you what is rocket science.
That's the beauty of it.
and where I deserve extremely high marks. And that is coupling this notion that my gunny gave me, you are not going to get over it, with this group of truths that I've learned by interviewing guys for going on, you know, into our fourth year now. And then going out and beating the drum and just saying, look, motherfuckers, this is the truth. Now, you could tell me to fuck off if you want because I told you, you know, if you deal with trauma, you got to stop drinking. And that's okay. But at some point, you're going to come to a crossroads. Do the right thing with your life. Do the right thing with your life. And it is that way with all these things. Because this is simply the amalgamation of the things veterans have told me. Right? And I told them, you know, I told Marie the story last night, and I don't know how these things come to me, but it's a story Jack Riley told me. And I said, look, you know, I think it takes more courage to join the Marine Corps now. And I said, let me explain to you why. when I was young, my teachers and coaches, a lot of them, they were all veterans, right? When we played football, your head was a weapon. That's why that's why you had a helmet and a face mask on. And we didn't stop for water breaks. You might get a water break if you run the damn play right. If you don't, we'll observe water discipline. And that's what we did. You know, when guys went to Vietnam, they had those two dinky-ass green fucking canteens.
Yep.
Right? And it's only about 120 with about 2,000% humidity in that son of a bitch. And listen to the story. So the story I tell is, I said, so it takes more courage, right? And so what I'm doing is I kind of like, how unique is our culture? And I go through the math, right? You get told you're less than 1%, right? I said, and I didn't have to take the math for Marines MCI because I'm an officer, but even I know that 1% of the population is 3.25 million people. The Marine Corps reserve and active is 220,000. Like, that's not a little bit less than 1%. That's fucking 0%. You're part of 0% of the population. If you don't think you're unique, you're crazy. And then I make this point. When I was a kid, right, we got raised like that. So joining the Marine Corps, I mean, it wasn't that much different than your life. Now, it's 180 degrees out. And I said, and this is the kind of culture that I was around. And I tell the story that Jack Riley told about before the Battle of Gettlin's Corner, they were moving, you know, they were southwest of Compiègne, and they're moving as a company. And he's with his squad, and they're part of this movement. And I want to say they were in the lead of their platoon, and they're moving up this stream. And so they get to the stream, and they're out of water. So they put out security. Everybody fills their canteens, right? They go a few hundred meters further down the stream, and what do you think they see in the water?
Bodies.
Six dead bodies. So Riley's the squad leader, and he says, our platoon sergeant turns and looks and says, put another halogen tablet in that water, boys.
I was just going to say that.
But last night I asked the Marines, I said, so what do you think they did with their water?
And
Marines said, they dumped it out? And I said, no, the fucking platoon sergeant said, put another halogen tablet in that shit, boy.
It's the iodine taste.
Yeah, because we're not dumping this shit out, that's for sure. And the Marines all start laughing. I said, that's the culture I got raised by.
Sure.
And I reject the notion that guys who can do that, women who can do that, that are less than that 1%, that have that DNA in them, all of a sudden become dysfunctional disasters because they've seen some shit in their lives. I reject that. We've got to do a better job communicating the truth, right? You're not going to go back to what you were, ever. You can do it, though. And it pisses me off that we're nobody, that not more people.
The DNA that makes you strong when you're in the core sticks with you for the rest of your life and makes you unique for the rest of your life.
Yeah, it ain't the Marine Corps, trust me, that makes the Marine Corps different. It's the people. The people that look like John Bazelon did, I want that, not that. The people that look at door number four, you could go serve with the smart people. Yeah, I don't want to do that. You could go serve with the let's go see the world group. Yeah, I want to see the world, but not like that. You could do that, and these two groups do it. This one's pretty reasonable. This one is kind of crazy. Their recruit training and their officer candidate school are crazy, full of narcissistic, wacko people. Which one do you want? Oh, I'll take number four. Oh, no, you don't understand. Oh, no, I do. I want to be in number four. That's that's a different cast of fucking people. And that DNA, and that's what I say now, that DNA is what you have to leverage, because if the only thing you do is look inward and think about your pain, that's not a good life to live.
Day one, when you show up at Quantico or boot camp, you confirm your worst ideas because they are all fucking lunatics.
Right? And we
absolutely, 100%.
And we all do it, right? Where you sit up and think, what the fuck did I do to myself? And now I'm fucked. Now I'm fucked because they shaved my head, and I can't go home now because everybody will know that I came here and I failed, and I can't have that. So the Marine Corps has this thing down so good. It's, you're fucked. You're fucked. So,
and I swore to myself I was going to quit, but I couldn't quit till the last day because I had to prove I could do it. And the last day, the goddamn gunner who'd been in World War II in Korea comes and sits and shoots the shits with us for an hour telling us war stories. Well, fuck, we would have signed up for 100 years then.
But they know. They know. But again, it's not the Marine Corps that is different. We'd like to think we are. And we have our own unique training and all that shit. What is unique is a person that looks at our propaganda when they don't, most of them don't know shit, and say, I want that. That's a different human being. They've got a chip on their shoulder. They want to be better. And that's what we make a corporation out of. And that's why all those commercials, we don't promise you anything, right? Maybe you could be one of us, the few, the proud, right?
Yep.
And then let me tell you, if I had a dollar for every person that said, well, I went and saw a recruiter when I was a junior in high school, and he told me to go away.
I'd be a rich man.
He told me to get the fuck out of his, yeah, we don't need people like you. What?
Well, how many times have you been in a group where there's a bunch of people that were never in, well, I was thinking about it, or I was going to go down there, or I was going to choose this.
Right. And I didn't, or whatever. But, I mean, recruiters, man, yeah, probably you're not for us. You join one of the other services. What?
Yep.
I went down,
yep.
I came in, the next time I went in that office, I had a pen, and I had smoke coming out of my ears. I was signing that contract. But no, it is. And then, what I end with is, look, I'm going to challenge you. That same DNA that took you through that door, that brought you through door number four, we're not done with it. You need to go back and you need to change your family, your friends, your community. And you can do that. You have it in you. And so the woe is me, victim, veteran bullshit, we ain't having that. We can do this shit. We can do, look, oh, transitioning's really hard. I saw my blockhead younger son do it. And if that son of a bitch can do it, and all, you know what it is? It's getting a little bit organized and then getting after it. And staying after it and staying after it and networking and talking to people. And ultimately, something good will happen. We can do that. So
I agree. Anyway. I think you're enjoying what you're doing. Maybe a little too much.
A little bit. Yeah. No, I mean, again, that's why I think about entrepreneurship. It's not easy creating something. And again, I would tell you, go buy something, right, that's already successful. Creating something out of nothing is not easy. And if you don't find a godfather or somebody that will support you, help you, encourage you, not only Bob's help financially, but you know, just as importantly is emotionally and spiritually. Because it's not fun getting your power shut off, right? And that's, and all that you go through, right, that keeps you at this trying to do something good and create something, because they're not easy roads. And it doesn't happen overnight. Bob, what percentage of small businesses fail in the first year?
Oh, God. 60%, 70%?
And in the first 24 months, wasn't it like 80% of small businesses fail?
Huge. Yeah. It's tough. It's not easy. But with all the goddamn background you've had in the service and everything and all the shit you've been through, if anybody can do it, you can do it.
Right.
Mac, one other thing I wanted to pass on.
Sure.
Turner is still actively engaged in trying to hire, of the 500 professionals they hire each year, over 10% veterans. And one of the things Turner's working on is they've realized that when they bring veterans in to the company that have been 4, 6, 8, 10 years in the military, we need to do some mentoring to them as they make the transition. So they're actively pushing programs where they have the vets that are already working with Turner mentoring the new employed vets. And it's important because we found, and other companies have found, that the hired vets, you tend to lose a lot in the first couple of years. So you really need programs to help them make the adjustment. But Turner's really working hard on it, and it's working.
No, Turner, I mean, let me just tell you. I mean,
mentoring. It's the mentoring that we do with wounded.
Right, right. And I think so much of it is cultural, and that you get him in there, and you get, like you said, you know, all you're trying to do is what your Gunny did, you know, the last week of OCS. Now you're part of the team,
yep.
Right? And let me just tell you, I think culturally it's one of the difficult parts of transition, because if you go to a foreign culture and slowly but surely as you stay there, you begin to slowly realize that your values aren't the same and the way you look at the world isn't the same, you're not long for that culture.
Exactly right.
No matter how much money you're making. You're looking for something else, because I don't see the world like these people do, and you want to know what? I feel alone there.
Yeah, we found when we sent expats overseas to work on our projects, after 3-4 years, we had to rotate them back to the States. Now, they were living good in good locations, you know, nice apartments and stuff, but that cultural issue is huge.
Right, and it's not just culture where you're at, but it's the other part is the culture of that you work in.
What you work.
Right.
What you work.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, and so that to me is hugely important too. All right, what else you got going on today? Anything exciting?
No, that's it. I just had a couple of meetings in the community and doing my stuff. I'm helping a couple of different vets right now. One is a Navy nurse that's thinking of getting into business, helping kids with problems. So we're working on stuff like that. So we've got a lot of things going. Got another Navy senior enlisted guy, 26 years in. And he broke his leg on board ship, and he's in rehab at Walter Reed, and he's going to write a book on some of the stuff we're talking about. So, good stuff.
All right. Well, look, thank you for joining us today, and have a great day.
Thank you, Mac. Have a good one. Have a good weekend.
There you have it. Bob Nielsen, the patron saint of All Marine Radio, here on a Thursday. And with that said, that's all she wrote today. Yeah, I didn't think getting home at that late hour I'd have that much to say. I'd have that much to say today, but I do. Yeah, no kidding. It is a source of frustration for me, though, personally. And that source of frustration is that we can do a better job of I think, telling people the truth so that they do know what to expect. That's my great frustration is I don't think we tell them the truth blunt enough. Because there's no doubt in my mind they can do it. But what happens is you don't tell them the truth. They're trying to get to normal. You're never going to see normal again, bro. The new normal you're going to live with is going to be vastly different from the normal that you used to live with. And I mean, and we all struggle with it. I mean, I did the other night, man. Over something stupid, right? Colleen was supposed to give me 2 chicken enchiladas with it. Rice and beans. Came back without the rice and beans, and for whatever reason, and it, you know, because it's a long week and some other shit, I mean, I was seething mad. And so, I mean, your life's going to be different. And we just don't articulate it well. It's, I think it's wrong. I think it's bad. So, anyway, post-traumatic winning, trying to change that. Anyhow, on a Thursday, if you're just tuning in, you're going to hear, in hour one, you're going to hear, I don't even look at the news other than the stuff in the Gulf of Oman. Hey, let me tell you what, man. That's Iran looking at us and saying, hey, fuck you, man. And the answer to that is, what'd you just say? If you want to go there, we'll go there. And mining international waters, that's an act of war. In any year, right, when you do that, so to me, what needs to happen is, right, is it possible that somebody else is laying mines to promote a conflict between Iran and the United States. And you'll see stories. There's one on Yahoo News right now, written by somebody from Bloomberg, that says this: Iran has little to gain from Oman tanker attacks. So it's a mystery? So it's a mystery. Some third party is mining international waters to create a conflict between Iran and the United States. That's what we're supposed to believe. Okay. Well, send a couple attack submarines to the region. Send some of our special people to work off one of the carriers and go find some of those mines. We'll find out where they came from. So, stay tuned. Have a great day. And again, I want to thank the Marines and sailors of CLB-23, reservists from the West Coast, up and down the West Coast, from the state of Washington to the state of California, with Oregon in between. Big Oregon Duck fan there last night. That's right. Talking shit about the Oregon Duck. I said, hey, man, that's all they got. They got to talk shit about that. No, but it's just always a great experience. So my thanks to everybody out there who made that happen. On a Thursday, have a great one. All Marine Radio is over and out.